And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Fans of Power. I am Joe Amato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. And Tyler, today we have a special guest. We have from Super 7, Brian Flynn. So, Brian, thank you for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
All right. Awesome. Now, just to, I guess to refresh some people's minds, because believe me, we go to there's so many groups on Facebook and other places and social media. There's a lot of new people to classics and maybe a lot of fans from Masters that are just now coming back. So maybe you can just give them a little idea of, who you are, what you're doing for, the brand now, because obviously you guys are doing a lot, but just a little refresh for some of the new people.
A refresh. Well, I'm a Gemini. I like oranges.
No. We'll send you some bags at Christmas.
No, the basically, obviously, I am the owner and I work at Super 7. And we like to make toys. With Masters of the Universe, we started working on Masters now. I would say it's been 3.5 years. And it started off with sort of a project that snowballed into the first Skeletor's Lair at San Diego Comic-Con, which involved making Masters of the Universe muscle, Masters of the Universe reaction figures, the first wave, bunch of apparel, and just trying to have a lot of fun with Masters of the Universe. Over the last couple of years, that has evolved into us basically being able to take over Matty Collector when they shut it down at Mattel and really just sort of take reins of, I don't want to say Masters of the Universe as a whole, because there are definitely other people working on stuff, but as far as toys and things go, unfortunately, you're kind of stuck with us right now.
Well, I wouldn't say stuck. I mean, I'd say that, it's a privilege, because what you guys are doing is something that many fans have wanted for years, meaning, okay, we've had classics for quite a long time now, which is great, and we still want them, but there's always been those fans who are like, man, I'd love to see the vintage 5.5 style come back. What if there was other styles that came? And just, it's funny, you came right out of the gate. Like you said, you're doing the 3.75 style of like a G.I. Joe Star Wars, size, which is something fans always had, theories. What would they look like? And they look great. So you guys did that. You're doing muscle. Now you're doing the 5.5. You're doing classics. You're doing more than I've seen any company do with this property. I mean, as one company itself, which is amazing, because you're satisfying, the needs of many fans, multiple fans. Because, as you've come across, there's some fans that just like classics, some like vintage, some like them both. But now you're, like I said, touching every aspect. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we're just trying to have fun and make the toys that ultimately we want to have and we think other people want to have. Obviously, with classics and Filmation, as you said, you've got an 8.5-year history, especially with classics. That is a phenomenal line. It's been going on forever, and there's no reason why it shouldn't continue. So, we wanted to jump in, obviously, and just keep that line going, as there's no reason to not. But along the same lines, try to start making other stuff. I think one of the things that we tend to run into, as you see with a lot of fans, is not understanding it. They think by the nature of us making muscle or making 3.75 reaction or trying to make 5.5-inch that somehow it slows down or diminishes the possibility that they're going to get more classics or Filmation 8-inch figures. And that's obviously not the case at all.
No, exactly. Because that, just to jump in real quick, you're right. There's the loud voice for the classics that are worried, oh, we might not get as many. But I belong to, as you've seen on Facebook, there are hundreds of Masters groups. I admin 13 of them, and a lot are the vintage ones. Those vintage fans, they have been starving for that 5.5-inch style. They've been going crazy. And when you guys showed, those Filmation versions of Skeletor, He-Man, She-Ra, and Hordak, they lost it. But the ones that really threw it over the top was knowing about Hero and Eldor, that finally, after all these years, we're going to get them. Yeah. Believe me, there is a giant fan base for the, the vintage style. Just maybe sometimes they're not as vocal, but they're there. Yeah. I've seen them, and I'm sure you have too.
Yeah, and ultimately, and that's the reason why those 5.5-inch figures actually aren't out yet, is simply when we, our relationship with Mattel and Mattel's relationship with Masters of the Universe and Universal, it can get very convoluted and complicated very, very quickly. The reason the 5.5-inch stuff hasn't come out yet is because once we did it, everybody went, hey, how come we never did that before? And so in that regard, Mattel is working with a larger retailer to try to put it on mass market shelves. The deal's not done. It's not put out. It's not anything else. But there is an attempt for that 5.5-inch line to be able to go on shelf at mass retail.
Oh, really?
So,
wow.
Because we were planning on having it out December. It was going to be out this year by Christmas. And most likely now it will be out by – it'll be out fall of 2018. So, which means basically August, as soon as back to school is over. Obviously, you could do all sorts of like news break, news flash, beep, 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 you know, but it's not set in stone yet. If that deal falls through, then the figures are ready to go and we'll release them. But more than likely, everybody's very excited about it. And so it's sort of moving back up the food chain from us to Mattel, but using our sculpts and our tools to make it.
Okay, so you guys still doing it, but going through, like you said, Mattel, and then Mattel trying to hopefully get some deals done to have it back in the mass market in the retail stores.
Yeah, I don't, you know, like I said, I don't know how much of this is we're supposed to talk about what we're not supposed to talk about. Essentially, when we took over the Masters line, and especially the Collector's Choice and Club Grayskull lines, basically part of the deal is that we're not allowed to sell to mass retail because that's Mattel's business.
Okay.
So we're allowed to sell the specialty, hobby, small chain, you know, all that, comic book shops, all that kind of stuff we can sell to. But I'm not supposed to sell Masters to Target, Toys R Us, and Walmart because that's Mattel's business. That's where they live. And if I'm all of a sudden selling something that's theoretically there to that client, I might be taking peg space away from them. But the reaction has been so strong to the 5.5-inch figures that now it's sort of moving backwards through the food chain where Mattel's going, well, maybe we want to take that now and run it to mass retail. And so I'm pretty sure it's going to happen, but nothing's set in stone yet. Things change all the time.
Yeah, like you said, things, you know, they do change. But if that actually did happen, I mean, just the reaction from the fans, I'm sure, would just be insanity because that's all they've ever wanted to see was saying, we'd love to see Masters back in retail. Because you look at other companies putting out other different styles and size of figures, and any Masters merchandise usually sells like nuts because, again, you have a lot of fans that, I mean, I deal with so many times, they say, I didn't know about Classics. I didn't know they were doing this. It's just, they're not there. They're not around. But when you go into a toy store and something's in front of your eyes, it's bam, it's got you. So hopefully that would bring back not only the older fans that, you know, miss seeing vintage, but a new generation. Hopefully there's those new kids that would see it and then it could just, you know, steamroll and just go crazy to where Masters really has that gigantic presence again. Because it's, as you know, basically us fans are keeping it alive and it's,
yeah,
you know, the older fans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where Masters does well the first 2 weeks it's on shelf. It does phenomenal, and then it falls off a cliff because everybody that wanted it got it.
Well, I'd hope it wouldn't stay at that case. I mean, as we know, you know, like for the 2000X line, for example, I mean, fans were clamoring for it, but the unfortunate thing was the case pack ratios with those figures. You would have 4 He-Man to 1 Man-at-Arms and, like, let's say 1 Orko. So somebody would snatch the Orko, Man-at-Arms, 1 He-Man, and eventually all the He-Man and Skeletors would start clogging. So in the eyes of the retailers, they were thinking, nobody wants this. And in reality, it's like, no, we do want it. We just don't want 1,000 variants and that crazy case pack ratio. A better even 2-2-2 could have made sense.
Yeah, I think you go back and forth. I think what really comes down to is that unless you were watching it for those 3 years or buying it for those 4 years, very few people outside the circle of those that group of people growing up on it really know what it is, which is the unfortunate reality that a lot of us deal with. It is like there's a heavy, heavy passion for it from the people that grew up with it. But if you didn't grow up with it, you're like, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Oh, I absolutely agree. That's like you said, that's when half the time you need a cartoon, you need a movie, you need something to let fans know what this is, especially a newer generation. But
yeah,
either way, the direction with what you guys are doing is fantastic. And before we start getting into some of the obvious, you know, figures that you're working on, the, you know, adjusting tooling and stuff and release dates, I didn't know, Tyler, if you had something that you wanted to shoot at, Brian, before we get to some of those.
How is this change with Mattel wanting to jump in with the idea that they obviously love that you guys were doing, has that, you know, has it enhanced against your own plan for going forward? Is it, do you have to adapt to it? Has it been helpful for you? I mean, with them thinking this was a great idea and pushing it further, I mean, how do you guys view that? I mean, I'm sure it's got to be helpful, but does it change things like in the scope, or is it pretty much keep things the same? What changes are made due to that?
Well, the biggest change, obviously, is it delays everything by a year. And so normally we'd be like, okay, hey, we need to start work. You know, right now I'd be working on like, okay, what are we doing after this? What's the wave after this one? What's the wave after that? Like, let's really start planning this stuff out. And now you're like, oh, well, these aren't even coming out for almost a year from now. So it slows everything down, where beforehand you'd be like, oh, okay, I'm going to put out 12 figures or 16 figures during next year. Now it's like, okay, all that plan on the line, it just sort of slows things down, because I'll be quite honest, I'd like to do it faster. I'd like to be getting the stuff out there and moving on to the next ones quicker, because I like making them.
Yeah, I could see that.
So had you guys already planned like the next wave or two after this initial group of the vintage line that you guys have finished?
Sorry, I'm cutting out a bit here, Hold on.
That's all right.
Let's see here. Did my Wi-Fi cut out on you?
No, you're still there. There was just one hiccup at one point, but no, you're pretty good. We can still hear you and see you.
Okay. All right. Well, I lost you guys there for a second, so I'm sorry. So can I have you rephrase the question, please?
Yeah, I was just curious that with that, have you guys planned ahead prior to Mattel coming in? Had you guys planned like another wave or two based on the vintage line?
We had planned two more waves. So we had already scripted out sort of what we were going to do for three waves of figures. We had started sculpting the first. You know, my take on it was a little bit like, one, like I want to remake 5.5-inch. I want to get back. That's the classic style. And then secondarily, where is always with what we're doing, where's the entry point for new collectors? With classics, the entry point was 8.5 years ago. Obviously, with the Ultimates, that brought some new people back in because they were able to start with core characters. With Filmation, you know, you go back 2 years, a year and a half, however long you want to call it, and even already people are like, oh, we'd really like you to release Skeletor and He-Man and Filmation, because I didn't get them. But it's like, well, it wasn't that long ago. And so with 5.5-inch, by starting at the beginning, once again, it gives people always a new place to jump in and start. And once they start, they generally then start going backwards into other lines, collecting other things. But there's a bit of constantly like, okay, how do we bring something new to the table to get people excited? Because a lot of people won't start buying a line if they can't start at the beginning.
That makes sense. No, it does. I mean, that's why you have to, you're right, half the time introduce the core main characters. Once they have those, they feel like they start at the beginning, then you can start moving on to the others. Because now, I'm sure, like you said, you were asked about, you know, when would, you know, Skeletor, He-Man, Hordak, She-Ra come out for, you know, the vintage style figures. And of course, you had Eldor and He-Ra. Now, Eldor and He-Ra, would that have been in a separate wave? They wouldn't have probably been with the Filmation versions, correct? Or would they have?
The way it changes by the day.
Okay.
The current plan is Skeletor, He-Man, Hordak, and She-Ra come as four figures, followed closely behind with four more figures that include He-Ra and Eldor.
Wow. Okay, so He-Ra and Eldor would add some others, because I mean, some no-brainers that I'm sure are... Oh, okay, I got you. No, some of the no-brainers were like, as we've seen those Arrow McCarthy figures that have been unearthed and, of course, were the PowerCon type of exclusives. I mean, to have them in the vintage form they were intended, I'm sure fans would like that also. So, I mean, there's so many avenues of things to do. So it's pretty much it's an endless supply of vintage, because you could hit the mini comics, the cartoon, any new things you have. Just like when you did Curse of the Three Terrors. I mean, it was cool to see new style figures. I was more excited about those than anything I've bought in years, because I'm a super vintage fan. I love classics too. But I was like, man, I feel like a kid again. These are so cool. And I didn't know if you've seen, but I put them up in my vintage shelf, because I was like, those things just blend perfectly. So I'm super excited about the vintage style. That's the ones I think I want more than anything.
Well, and the thing is that, just as you say, the vintage line can go very deep into very collector-centric things about things that we simply didn't have, things that were different in toy form versus animation form, concepts. The other thing that we've talked about a bit over the last couple of years is that we've found an unreleased sculpt that no one's ever seen for Masters of the Universe. It's just legs and arms. And there's no torso, no head, but it's an unreleased from a Mattel sculptor. And we have literally 200 pages of concept drawings of where all these toys came from and tons of unreleased ideas that were rejected. And so when does that stuff start coming into play? Like the Giants with Titus and everything. Like, I have drawings of six more Giants that never came out.
Oh,
phenomenal.
Yeah, we have... With Eldor specifically, and this will come when we do Eldor and he comes on card, it will come with a, instead of a mini comic, it will come with a book that shows these things. But it's like, here's the evolution of Eldor. It starts as one character, and there's literally about 14 stages of evolution till it gets to the very end.
Wow. One quick thing, Brian. Didn't mean to interrupt you, but I didn't know if you might be covering your mic or something. You've got a little muffled.
Get a little muffled? I don't know. Let's
now
see.
You're perfect. Now
there
you're
you are.
Yeah. There I am.
Okay, I didn't quite get what you said about Eldor. You said something about Eldor, and then it went muffled. If you could.
Oh, okay, sorry. So with Eldor, in these prototype sketches, we got the original concept of what he was, which is radically different than where he ended up, and it goes from here through about 14 iterative stages till it gets to the figure that came out. So what we'll do is we'll take all those concept drawings and talk about the steps, put all those into where the book, where the mini comic goes. So you can be like, here's the whole history of Eldor. So everybody else knows him as just, here's the picture from the catalog. And we've got, no, here's the entire history from concept to execution of this figure.
That's fantastic. Also, the thing that gets me most excited, I don't know, if you answer or have the answer, cool, but as you know, the Powers of Grayskull vintage mini comic, you know, it was part one of a part three series. We never got the official part two or three back then. As for classics, they made a new story that was different. Obviously, it wouldn't have been the story we got as, you know, back in the 80s, but did you guys ever have any more of the mini comics? Is that anything that could have been in that stuff or no?
No, this was a toy designer that worked on Masters, and he died about 6 years ago, and his family has been slowly going through his estate with a friend of mine, and he came across all this stuff, and they keep giving him just little box of stuff here, little box of stuff there, and going through it all with him, it's like, okay, here's all this Masters of the Universe stuff, and no one's ever seen it. No one knows anything about it. Mattel clearly doesn't have it, but he kept photocopies of everything he ever worked on. So it's every single piece that he ever worked on for Masters. And, you know, there's some really good stuff in there. There's some stuff that probably a good idea that never got made.
I can imagine.
There's a lot of really cool history. So same thing, like, when do we start diving into all this prototype concept stuff that no one's ever seen before? That's another thing we want to really start trying to plan into the line. But same thing. If you push out a year till we start launching, that pushes out that stuff even further.
Oh, I could see. Yeah, I mean, that clearly makes sense. And there's also, like, well, remember there was the figures that we never got in the United States, like the laser versions, you know, the laser light Skeletor, laser power He-Man, and, well, you said Titus and Megator. You know, is that anything down the road that could be a possibility? If things take off and we're hot, could you take those molds from those actual vintage figures and do them for the United States so we don't have to pay thousands?
I am always very, very reticent to make a reproduction of anything because we could go into a whole bunch of stuff, but ultimately, like, it's old, it's rare, it's been around, or it was original. And, you know, anytime a reproduction is made, it devalues the original and it doesn't really do anything for the collector as a whole other than save some people some money. I would rather go look at that and go, how do you do something different with it? How do you evolve it somehow so that the originals stay the originals. Like, even when we put out the Alien Reaction figures, which were a redo of the Kenner prototypes from 1979, we changed parts of every sculpt so that no one could take an arm or a leg or a torso out of context or a test shot from our factory and pass it off as an original. Like,
okay,
you know.
No, like that makes, no, and it is, that's good. You're right. I mean, if, like you said, you ever did touch on those figures I mentioned, you're right. You could do a slight little adjustment to the armor or something to change it, if you guys, but if you didn't, you're right. I completely understand, because you're right. It does take away the value from the originals, but you know.
Well, and it takes away some of the mystique. Part of the reason that people want Titus and Megator is because they couldn't have them. And if all of a sudden everybody could have them, the real question is, would you want them? Because a lot of people really don't like the aesthetic of those giant figures.
It's there's some, just some of the rabid fans that I've come across want them badly, but there's like, I can't afford $2,000. I can't afford $3,000. Yeah. But you know, you're right, though. It's like you said, who would really enjoy them? Who wouldn't? But I think the lasers are kind of no-brainers, because I think they would definitely...
I think that there would be a way, if you were to go down that road, you know, like I said, that we're not talking about lasers at all right now, but... If we were talking about the giants or something, it's like, how do we do something so that as a collector, even if you had the originals, you really want these as well. But if you didn't have the originals, you would be satisfied with these. And that's a fine line. It's no different than the same thing. That's part of the reason we came out with the animation accurate, is I was like, everybody wants me to reissue the original 5.5-inch figures, but I don't want to do that. Let's find a better way to make 5.5-inch figures. So rather than reissuing the originals, buy the originals. But if I make them animation accurate, there's something there where if you don't have them, you buy them and you want them. And even if you have the originals, now it's something different and you can have it next to it on the shelf. So when we talk about Laser Light or we talk about Titus and Megator, I would have to, and I don't have the answer now, I would have to figure out how we could do that same sort of approach with those figures so that it's something new yet old at the same time.
Yeah, and you're right. It would be hard to do with those giants. And I do agree with what you're doing with the animation style for the other four figures. I mean, it's genius, because they do look like they're coming from the cartoon, and beyond new fans wanting and old fans like us, it seems like it's a brand new figure. So you're right. I wouldn't have wanted them to take the molds of the vintage ones and do them again, because heck, we got them years ago when we got those commemorative ones at the stores. And it's like, that's cool. But I was like, it's the same figure. And you're right. If you would have done that again, I don't think too many fans would have been flipping over it. They would have wanted something new, like what you guys, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah. And like I said, if you get into the larger context of anything, whether it's all the myriad of things I collect, which are not just toys, whether you're talking about old punk rock records, or you're talking about skateboards, or you're talking about toys, or you're talking about whatever. Any time someone makes a reproduction, over time, you see that reproduction never gains value. It only becomes cannon fodder. It devalues the original, and it ruins the market on certain things very quickly. So I'm very reticent as both a manufacturer and a collector to make reproductions of anything.
Oh, and it's happened. I mean, that's happened with the commemorative ones that I've seen come out in groups. Sometimes somebody said, hey, I don't remember Merman having this shade of green on his belt, or there's like a different detail. They're like, I don't remember this. It's like, because that's the commemorative one. And it does. It just causes confusion. So again, what you're doing is great, but I'll pass it to Tyler before we hit some more. But Tyler, if you have something you want to say.
I wanted to ask you, because I know your position, you deal with a lot of fan questions probably on a hourly basis. You're probably getting, you know, constant, you know, asks and questions.
I'm not saying that there's so much questions as statements about my lack of ability to manufacture things well.
All right. Well, then I'd love for you to take this time to address the biggest misconceptions that you've been dealing with since you guys have taken on the He-Man property, and to let fans know, you know, it's not this way, it's really this way. I mean, what are some of the ones that you're constantly dealing with that you really feel like need to be put to rest moving forward?
I mean, I don't know. Usually the thing is that, you know, obviously in any forum or Facebook group or anything else, you know, people feel the need to be demonstrative in ways they are never in real life.
Yes.
You know, generally speaking, whether it's at PowerCon, whether it's at San Diego, New York Comic Con, or a smaller convention, or even when people email me directly, even when they're seemingly really annoyed about something, once we talk about it for 10 seconds, see, I feel like a lot of it usually comes down to venting. There's a lot. I think the biggest issue right now, it's not even an issue, is just because, and maybe it's because we've been more open to talk about things and change things and discuss things, is that people feel more liberty to talk about our decisions made. So you start to run into these things where it's like, you know, a perfect example is with the plastic on that was used on the stuff for PowerCon. There's people that really hate the slightly translucent, more lifelike feel of that plastic, and because it's a bit shinier. There's other people that feel like it needs to be matte plastic. There's yet another group of people that feels like it needs to be matte plastic, but then painted, that it should not ever be the actual plastic color. And in doing so, you have to go through here and sort of make a call to which what you're going to do so that you feel produces the best figure. And in doing so, you're automatically going to make somebody feel like that we fucking got it way wrong and we don't know what the fuck we're doing or any other, you know, nice things. And it sort of six one half dozen the other. We had the same discussion about the durometer of the wings for the PowerCon 3-pack. And, you know, there were certain people on both my team and the Four Horsemen side that really felt like their wings, they should be very pliable, they should be very soft. There are certain people that felt like they needed to be stiffer and be sort of firm and stand still. And we went with a softer durometer. So therefore, anybody that falls into the camp that feels that they needed a harder durometer for the wings thinks that we fucked it up and we made it shitty. And anybody that thinks that we should use a softer durometer is like, oh, they did it right. And so you don't hear from the people who are like, they did it right. The people that just go, oh, I like it. Cool. Put it on my shelf.
Yeah, and which is something I was going to bring up. You're right. I mean, that's the thing. Unfortunately, sometimes the loudest voices are the ones that are maybe saying the negative things. And the people that are pleased, I guess they're just content with what they have. They're happy, and they just don't open their mouth. So, you know, it seems like, you know, the negative outweighs the positive. But I think in some aspects, usually the people that are happy, I mean, what's there to complain about if they're pleased? But I'm sure, like you said, you hear so many complaints on things, but... Well, like you said, hopefully...
Well, we hear a lot of complaints, but the reality is it's also like there's times when those complaints are valid. So I'm not opposed to hearing somebody critique what I made. My ego's not going to live and die on whether or not I made all the correct decisions on a toy line. So I don't have any problem with that. There's a few collectors out there that email me fairly regularly about all the changes that they would like to see. But it's also worth noting, like people can say, like, oh, they can also see, hey, here's things that we've talked about, and they've addressed them. Like, perfect example, if you want to talk about Tila's face paint, and we showed an updated face paint for that. People are like, hey, we really are bothered by this. And we go, oh, yeah, that's a valid concern. Let's really update this face paint. So it's not that. It's just we have to then go through all those discussions and decide which points are valid and which points are preference, and then sort of gauge and scale where we are from that. I think the other thing, obviously, is that, you know, what's hard right now is that we're in the midst of the second pre-order and we don't have the first figures in front of people. So until we get those figures in front of people, I think there's a lot of people that aren't going to buy into the second pre-order. So,
but you do good stuff for those first waves for Collector's Choice and Club Grayskull. I mean, recently we've seen that, but you could refresh fans on what you've done to those figures to, I guess, maybe, you know, hopefully make them feel a little more at ease.
Well, I think the biggest thing is really, and I the funny part is I probably reiterated the story about 65 times, if not more, at PowerCon, and I will probably be reiterating it till the day I die. The difference between a figure when you're holding it and you're like, oh, these are really nice, stiff joints versus, oh, this is kind of loosey. They didn't really do a good job on on QC with this figure is about a hundredth of an inch. You know, literally, it's like, because all those points of articulation are just friction. They're not mechanical. They're all friction-based. So it's, you know, a ball and socket popping on top of each other or whatever. So if that thing is just off by literally hundredths of an inch, it's either going to be too tight or too loose. So actually making and injecting the plastic and getting the tools made is sort of the easy part. You then spend literally months finessing this stuff where you're like, okay, polish the mold a little bit more. Now inject it again. Let's see how that fits. Okay. Oh, it's fitting a little loose. Sandblast it ever so subtly. Let's see how that does. And you literally just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until you find the sort of correct happy medium of where it the joints stay tight, they move, and you feel like, and you have no feel, but you have to be confident that they're going to stay that tight for years to come versus like, oh, it's pretty good now, but is it going to get loose as you continue to use it, as those friction points continue to grind on each other? It's the tolerances on this stuff are really, really, really small. So, you know, that's one of those things where it just takes time to finesse those things. And, you know, you run this really fine line where if you make it too snug, snap. But, you know, if you make it more snug, you're not going to run into any problems with loosey-goosey arms. You're not going to run into any problems with it getting, you know, looser as time goes on, as the material degrades, as it rubs against each other. So finding that fine line on all of these toys takes time. And every time you do it, you start over again. So it's one of those things where, you know, like I said, when I start explaining it to people, like, this is literally the difference that you're talking about. Like, I was explaining it to one guy at PowerCon, and he goes, oh, that totally reminds me of, and I think it was maybe the original Sorceress, where the feet were really loose, and people would just shoot hairspray onto the ball socket of the foot and snap it back on to tighten it up, and that would be enough of a difference from loose to tight. And it's like, yes, that is literally the mechanical differences that we're talking about between a good figure and a shitty figure. So there's a lot of work that you go into back and forth on all these stuff. Because then it's like, okay, I shot the plastic. Now what happens when the plastic cools and it contracts? Now how does it fit? So it's not just a matter of like, oh, it's exactly the same thing as the mold. It's not. It's, you know, you've got to deal with plastic contraction. You've got to deal with friction tolerances. It gets really noodly after a while, and the differences are very subtle. So, you know, we try to bake in the proper amount of time that it takes to do all that work. But if they're not right, you kind of have to just push out and keep working on it until they are right. And
it's better, though. I mean, it's better that you guys are taking your time to make sure everything's perfect before it comes out, because then you would have, again, like you said, people complaining. So I'd rather you take your time and, you know, however many months it would take to have a perfect figure, instead of saying, okay, let's rush it out, let's get it to them so everybody shuts their mouth and then they have a product they're not pleased with. So that's good what you're doing, because you're, I mean, aren't you guys even doing something with like the hips or the different side hips?
Yeah. And that's to do with the tolerances of the spacer that goes in between. If you were to take one of your classics and you flip it over and you splay the legs out 90 degrees like he's Jean-Claude Van Damme, you'll see as the crotch comes down, then there's a circular spacer that sits inside the crotch that the two legs pop into. And you've got to have a certain amount of width for the legs to attach to that circular piece, and at the same time have enough friction onto the ball joint that connects into the circular piece to hold the leg socket. But same thing, if how wide that circular piece dictates how much grip and hold it can hold onto the ball socket, which also dictates how well you might get these really narrow legs, and the hips might fit really well together, but then there's not enough strength inside the ball socket if you start popping the legs off and on to keep it from cracking. So it's all these fine lines of like, you know, really. So we've been working on that a lot of hip width. Like, if you look at the PowerCon figures, nobody really complained about the male hip width. But we went, but we were still adjusting it in this round because we felt it was too wide and looked off. Everyone and their grandmother, though, was complaining about Tila's hip width and Sorceress's hip width. So, you know, that's also been heavily adjusted.
All right. And is there an estimated release on the Wave 1 figures? Because like you said, obviously, it's taking more time. I mean, is there a
No. We have only two changes that were left to be made. One was Triclops' head was sitting too high on the neck, and then Lodar's armband was missing. Those were the only two things that were left, and I don't know where Lodar's armband went. Apparently, I think it found some sort of, you know, leather shop in China or something. I'm not sure. So we've already gotten revisions on Triclops' head that we're happy with. We're just fixing Lodar's armband, and at that point, we start shooting plastic, painting them, and shipping them, stick and paint, start shipping essentially, you know, basically November 28th, December 1st, right around there. But then you run into this thing that'll happen, which we will get tons of complaints about, which is if you're in Europe, it's actually cheaper for you to airship your stuff from China to Europe rather than boat it all the way down under Africa and back up versus the US, which it makes more sense to put it on a boat and ship it over. So people in Europe will get their figures before the people in the U.S. simply by nature of how shipping works.
Okay.
So then I will get a whole ton of complaints about, I ordered them on the first week. How come these jerks in Europe have them? I don't have them. You stole my money, you awful people.
God. Well, I'm glad you at least explained that. So hopefully people that were always wondering what was going on, now they know. Hopefully it'll set them at ease a little bit.
I'm not trying to make light of it. It's just there's a certain amount of this that, you know, you can't communicate to everybody what's going on, even if you send an email to every order, even if you do, you know, if I did every podcast, if I was on Facebook all day long, if I was doing this, I still can't tell everybody exactly what's going on. So inherently, there's going to be people that don't understand what's going on and they're upset about it. And that's completely valid. It's our job to then get out in front of it and tell people what's going on. So at least usually what I've found is once you explain it to people, they go, oh, that makes sense. Okay.
You know, that's what's good. That's what's great about, I mean, what you're doing. You're interacting with fans. You don't get that from many companies. Not many toy companies, they'll go out of their way to almost on a regular basis communicate back and forth with fans to let them know what's going on. So just you doing that, I mean, that's something that is fantastic that you rarely see from toy companies.
You know, it's I hate to say it's not rocket science, and I don't want to give away all the secrets because there aren't really that many secrets, but it's just like, you know, it's like any other job. Like if you're not talking to the person that's supposed to do the other job next to you, how are you supposed to know what's going on? So how am I supposed to assume that everybody out there knows what's going on with Masters of the Universe and what's unless I tell them?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Tyler, you can go ahead, ask him something.
Have you guys, I asked this on Joe's behalf as well. the Meaty Orbs, have you guys thought about including them in future waves? Has it been discussed at all? Do you guys see it as a hard sell? That's one faction that continues to be left out.
We're going to pretty much put them to the side. We don't ever want to talk. No, I'm just kidding.
I completely understand, Joe. You just have to deal with that.
Yeah, I've collapsed.
No, I can say that it is not in our current plans in any way, shape, or form, but that doesn't mean that it won't be. It's the same thing. Like right now, it's like we get excited and we have the same conversations probably you guys are having. Be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if? And what if they do this? And what if they do this next? And then I have to sort of stop and go, remember, 5.5-inch figures probably aren't even coming out till August of next year. Like we can't put our cart so too far in front of our horse. We've got to sort of just make sure we're doing what we're doing. and stay on target and stay on plan, for lack of a better description. But, you know, the thing is that as a, you know, much like you guys, it's like we collect this stuff. So it's like, I'll make as much stuff as they'll let me. Hardest part of trying to be cognizant of how much I'm asking you guys to spend to buy the toys. I could make, you know, 36 classics figures a year if I wanted to, but the reality is how many people can really afford it? And if it starts to get expensive, you feel like you're being fleeced, and you know, these other things, and you stop collecting, you don't just stop and go, okay, I'll cherry pick and I'll just pick one here, pick one there. You just stop as a whole. So we always try to be very, very clear about how much money am I asking somebody to pony up and spend per year to collect this line. So with between classics and Filmation, the idea is that it's 16 figures a year, 4 in spring, 4 in summer, 4 in fall, 4 in winter. We haven't quite got on schedule yet, but the idea is that every 3 months I'm asking you only to buy 4 figures. That's it. You should be able to stay along, collect, and not get in a place where it's like, this is too pricey to do.
Yeah, too much hurts the wallet. You're right. I mean, spreading it out like that, yeah, that's it's a relief on the, you know.
Yeah,
the
and money. Of course, we're completely not going according to our plan right now because we're sputtering and starting and trying to get it all streamlined.
Right.
So it's like, here's 8. We'll ship the other 8 next week, I promise. You know, but the idea is, especially going into 2018, is that spring we would do 4 classics, summer we do 4 Filmation, fall we come back with 4 classics, and holiday we come back with 4 Filmation figures. And then, of course, you'll have something probably special at PowerCon and maybe something at San Diego. But that then it's like, okay, I know how much money I need to spend for the year. I can budget accordingly. You know, the payment plan system that we've put in place, I think there's a lot of people are like, eh. It's like there's a lot of people that that's the difference between the line and them not. So we have to be really, really cognizant of how much money am I really asking you to spend per year to collect the line. And as much as I want to make all sorts of stuff, that doesn't mean that it's best for everyone that I do that.
Okay. Because, yeah, I could see. I mean, like you said, all the things that, you know, could be made. Like one that I hear a lot from fans, which will lead into something that is interesting that me and Tyler, when we talked with somebody in a previous episode, but okay, we've seen the amazing mock-up mini comics that came with the Ultimates. I mean, those things are fantastic. Those
covers, that was a brilliant idea.
I love it. I mean, love it. Now, here's the thing. Are mini comics for like the vintage 5.5 style, is that something that's been considered, talked about, actually doing a real mini comic for a particular figure, or is that just maybe too much or out of the price range of getting an artist to do something like that?
It's not a matter of price range. What it really comes back down to is content creation, and that becomes a very problematic gray area with both Mattel and Universal. So with, and the reason that you didn't see mini comics included with like the reissue figures when they made the 5.5-inch reissues is because there was this big ongoing sort of debate / who's going to pay who over who actually owned the content of the mini comics, since they were written and drawn by people outside the company. Who owned it? You know, it's sort of like, it's probably been resolved, but if you're talking about, if you remember the Star Wars comics, there was a bunny in the Star Wars comics, Jax. You know, who owns that bunny? Is that bunny was created by Marvel and used in their products. Does Marvel have the rights to that bunny, or does Lucasfilm? So when the mini comics, before all the Dark Horse stuff books got made, they ended up having to come with a settlement and paying out a lot of the original artists and writers for who to get out of the gray area of who owns it. So when you're talking about new mini comics, the biggest thing to come into is who owns that content, who's in charge of creating that content, because the moment that becomes content, that becomes canon. And tell this character can't do that, and this can't do this, and this objects with this, and it opens up this giant can of worms. So I'll relate it to the fact of, like, when we made the Curse of the Three Terrors cartoon, part of that deal was that we have no rights to anything that we created. Like, all those characters, all the storyline, the concept, everything is owned wholly 100% by Mattel. We don't have any rights to it in any way, shape, or form.
Wow, I had no clue. I guess something new to learn, because, I mean, I guess the reason I was asking about this in general is Larry Houston, who worked on more of the vintage mini comics than any of the other artists back then, we had him on the show. And, of course, he's responsible for Geldor and Lodar and Prince Dacon. Prince Dacon, right. And many characters. And we asked him, we said, now, did Geldor officially die in the end of that comic? Because fans for years, you know, said, oh, he got consumed by the tree, so he got, you know, eaten or was absorbed. And Larry said, well, I don't see him as dying. I see him as being somehow his essence is in the tree, and that if he was to come back, he could burst out of the tree. And I said, oh, Larry, I said, this would be the perfect idea. I said, if Super 7 ever gave us a vintage Geldor that a lot of fans have always wanted, you'd have to do the mini comic release, the cover of showing Geldor busting out. You know, like, it'd be great to have not only the return of vintage style figures, but one of the people that worked on the vintage comics make his return to the vintage mini comics. But like you said, now with things up in the air, how it'd work, I guess it couldn't happen. But if it did, Larry Houston said he would be all for doing, you know, mini comics to return.
It really just comes down to time and logistics, because same thing, like, if Universal or Mattel has any ideas about what they might want to do, or decides that they're going to start extending the universe in some way. I'm just making it up, but say they decide they were going to reboot the line, or that the movie came back into play. All of a sudden, anything you were doing in those mini comics comes into play, because all of a sudden, say somebody wanted to come up today and wanted to make a movie about, you know, Masters of the Universe, and they wanted to talk about a villain that happened before Skeletor or whatever. And all of a sudden I go, hey, wait, no, that was Hordak. I mean, not Hordak. That was King Heltor. Like, that's my idea. So therefore you can't do that. It becomes this huge gray area. So, you know, it's tricky, because you just have to have a much bigger machine aligned and a lot more people working on it to make sure that everybody's on board with all the content decisions and the implication it has for the larger universe. So it's usually just basically a fight that I just don't want to fight.
Okay.
I understand that. Now, you had mentioned Universal. Are we talking, you know, that they have a sense? Are we talking Universal Studios, like the film company?
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Okay, what is their part in all this?
So most people used to say, oh, DreamWorks owns part of Masters. So what happened was, sometime in the 90s, Mattel took all of their dead IP, Masters of the Universe being one of it, and sold it all to Classic Media, because they were like, we're never going to use this again. Let's just get some money for it. So they sold it to Classic Media. Classic Media was later absorbed by DreamWorks, which has now been absorbed by Universal. So technically speaking, Masters of the Universe is owned by Universal. And Mattel has a license from Universal to make everything. That said, there are also these very gray areas, which are, here are all the toys that happened before the TV show. These were created and owned whole by Mattel. Now you have all the stuff that was made and created in storylines that were done for the TV show that then became toys. So the people that created the TV show owned those characters before the people that made the toys owned those characters. So who owns what and how it goes is a very, very long and convoluted thing. But long story short, the easy way to think about it is Universal owns Masters of the Universe, but has granted Mattel all the rights to do anything and everything they want to with it. And then Mattel pays royalties to Universal.
So now, because this is kind of an underlit, but just kind of makes me think of this, whereas Sony had the film rights, but Universal owns Masters of the Universe, does that pretty much put the kibosh on Sony's ideas, since Universal, a competition or competitive film company, owns the rights to that property? Just in that regard, does that?
If Sony's rights have not expired, no deal that they could do could take somebody's rights away. But like I said, I don't know the ins and outs of that stuff.
Gotcha, yeah.
That's all. Are you talking? You're talking about the new movie, not the old movie.
Yes, the new movie. Yeah, the one that Sony has been.
The theoretical new movie.
Yes, the one that
Yeah.
we think is coming in, you know, in 2 years. But I was just, because I
The
had no
one that's
idea that
been
you'd.
coming in 2 years for about 8 years.
Yeah,
Even
and they're
longer.
coming in about
Yeah.
8 years for another 15. So I, yeah, whatever. But
Yeah.
I had
No,
no idea you'd.
if their rights have not expired, that wouldn't change. They would
Okay.
still own the rights. I'm sure at a certain point, Universal will probably want to consolidate their rights, but I'm obviously not a representative of Universal in any way, so I don't know how all that goes. There's no telling, quite honestly. But I can say that having done plenty of this stuff, the backside of who owns what on Masters of the Universe is a very murky question that many people at both companies do not fully understand. Because it's constantly, every time we want to try to do some of these other stuff, it's like everybody's going to go, I don't know, let me check in. I think we own that, but I got to find out for sure. And it's most of the stuff, it's like you see these guides and it's like this thick. That's who owns what. And this one's like this thick. It's very,
God,
very common.
man, enough to make your
It's
brain
kind of,
explode.
it's just, yeah,
Yeah.
it's mind-numbing to know that all these details that you've been dealing with just with this property alone. I mean, that's, man,
Yeah, because
how
like
do you?
even look, no, because you're right. Because look at how long, like, everybody's, like been wondering, will we ever get official movie figures from 1987? And we hear about all the great writers.
The movie's owned by yet another person of the old
Yeah.
movies. And that guy hates Mattel with a passion and said, in as much that as long as Mattel is involved with He-Man, they will never do anything with his movie. We had conversation with somebody that knows him that said, now that Mattel is not involved, he may consider talking to you guys, but we have not gone any further than that on anything, and we have not had any discussions about it. But we do know that that is something that people want. We think
Oh,
it would be fun to make. But, it's also one of those things where even if I did do that right now, I'd be talking about a late 2019, 2020 at the earliest kind of thing.
yeah. I mean, you're
But
right. If it happened, I mean, it would be absolutely fantastic. Like in two of the big groups that I admin, I put up a poll. I said, if you could have your choice of them making, hypothetically, movie figures, mini comic figures, Filmation He-Man, Filmation She-Ra, NYP, I said, what would you prefer? And in the polls, both of them, the giant topper was the movie, and right underneath was mini comic characters. It was just crazy to see, but just to see the love and desire for those movie figures is just, it's overwhelming. But like you said, is it going to happen? I mean, it's probably not. I mean, if it did, it'd be great. Because once Karg was shown, I know so many people got confused. They said, wait, they got the movie rights. It's like, no, that's based off of the version that was in the magazine and a little bit of, like you said, a loophole. But oh, how many people I had explained.
We found a very small loophole and then we tried to drive a Ford Chevy through it. Wait, a Ford Chevy doesn't make any sense. Sorry, a Ford truck. There we go.
Yeah, because yeah, you had enough people having a heart attack to where they thought, oh, they have the rights now. We're going to get everybody. God, Skeletor,
No,
Lupin.
we do not have the rights to the movie. Maybe one day we will, but like I said, for us right now, it's like we're all talking about, like, it's a perfect example. We're here now talking about, well, what about the movie and what about this and let's get on that. And it's like, hey, how about we get wave one out first?
Yeah.
I
No.
always have to temper myself with, there's a lot of things I want to do, but I got to focus on making sure I follow through with the stuff that I've got now, or otherwise we won't get to make movie figures.
Just a good businessman talking.
Yeah, and like for the Ultimates that you guys, when you did the Ultimates, I mean, again, you kind of reintroduced some of the main characters that obviously people didn't get at the beginning. And is that something that you'd want to expand more on, certain main characters, or like hard to get ones, or do you think it would take the value down? Like, okay, for example, like Fisto and Shadow Weaver. So many people said, oh, I'd love to get them, but they're so expensive now. Would you think of visiting them, or is it, well, again, like you said, what would you have to do? Change Shadow Weaver's outfit to more red and purple, or, you know, I don't know what you'd do.
Part of it was, how do we make it so people can afford to get back into collecting classics? And then how do we bring Skeletor and He-Man back to let people jump in? Part of it was like, there's lots of stuff that's been done over the years. Let's figure out how we can bring all this stuff back and repackage it in a new way. I a lot of time with Fisto is one for me where it's just like, maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure the demand for Fisto is simply, I don't want to pay $80 on the secondary market.
Yeah, no, they don't want that secondary market for him, and especially for Shadow Weaver. I mean, she goes over 150 to 200, and people are like, I'd hope they do those in Ultimates, and like how you added extras or multiple types of
exactly.
items.
And that's part of it is like, is it a core character that we really think that everybody probably needs to get and needs to be revisited? Are there a lot of different accessories and things that we can bring to it that reinvent it for the people that already have it? But if it's just here for, hey, I want to save $40. Can you hook me up? That's probably not the reason to make it. So, but Shadow Weaver is one of those characters that everybody's got an opinion on Shadow Weaver. That's for sure. I've seen quite a few resculpts of Shadow Weaver submitted in from different people going, this is how it should have been made. Let's talk.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, she was a fantastic figure. I mean, like you said, if they were to do a re-release, hypothetically, I mean, I could see that a variant color of looking more red like the cartoon, maybe they could give her bird on a perch, Styrax, that one, you know, mm-hmm. like kind of vulture, that could be a cool addition to her. I mean, I guess that could spice her up. But, you know, yeah, right, Fisto, most time people just don't want to double the price, you know, pay. But, I mean, I guess if you could jazz him up with something different, it could be cool. But you're right, it's just like, what is the important figure? What do you think people want the, I guess, most to feel like they should have?
Yeah, and you know, what has a reason for being? Like, you know, Ram Man was one of those 50-50 ones, but we really felt like, okay, we can come back with Mini Comic and do it in a different way. And that gives it a point of difference. Where if it's just, hey, can you just make Fisto again and maybe change his belt? It's like, well, Fisto's pretty right on. I don't know that I need to fix anything on Fisto.
You're right. I mean, he did look right on. I couldn't remember. I'll be honest. I didn't know. Did he get both of his swords for the figure, like his purple one and then that big Buster version? Oh, he did? Okay. I was just trying to think of some extras to get, and I was like,
I gotta run behind you if you need to have it validated.
Okay, yeah, right behind you. I was like, I don't know, give him a beer stein that he had in the one MYP episode. I don't know, because, I mean, there's not many more things, but I couldn't figure
it out. Yeah, so, you know, we get a lot of people asking about the Ultimates, simply, I think, one, because, I'm not going to lie, I think the packaging was very exciting for people.
Damn right it was.
It felt like I was buying an old figure. It felt like, okay, I feel like I'm a kid again, and I think people want to have more figures with that packaging and with that feeling and emotion with them. It's just tricky because with classics and Club Grayskull, I always say classics and Filmation rather than Collector's Choice and Club Grayskull.
Well,
That works.
Yeah, so... you know, with classics and Filmation, you've got figures that have been in packaging now for 8 years. As much as I would love to put them on Exploding Rocks card backs, that doesn't make sense. They've been in this packaging forever. And if you're collecting this whole line, you don't want to get to this point and then have it change. It's like, so we're going to keep those in the classic packaging. So the question really becomes like, how do we find other places to bring back the Exploding Rocks? That's the 5-inch figures.
Yes, which is great that you guys are doing that, because I mean the Ultimates, don't get me wrong, love the packaging, love the fake mini, I mean the mock-up Mini Comic on the back, to have that art at the top is great. I mean, it just, you're right, it felt like bam, that felt like our stuff from our childhood. But now that you're doing the 5.5-inch ones, then hopefully, like you said, we're getting completely all new figures, and it could just keep it going. It's almost like continuing what we had over 30 years ago. So that's a great thing for especially a lot of the vintage fans.
Yeah, we're gonna try to hit as many of those fish hook in the mouth points as possible along the way.
Now you got wave two that you when is the ending of the pre-orders for wave two? Is that still Halloween or what?
Well, that I'm sorry, I keep moving my laptop around here since I'm sitting on the floor. The original plan was to end on Halloween because we also felt like we were gonna have the wave one done by then. The reality is, and it has been expressed, I think, by a lot of people, is they're very nervous about ordering wave two until they have wave one in hand. I don't want to give you a pile of my money again when I haven't even gotten the first pile of money. And I can understand that thing. So right now, what we're talking about doing, we talked about and agreed to, we haven't sent out the email, we need to, is that essentially we're going to keep the pre-order open until we ship wave one.
Oh, wow.
Just because the reality is, and quite honestly, looking at our pre-order numbers, which aren't great right now, I mean, they're fine, but they're not as strong as they were for wave one, and I think those character selection in wave two is stronger. It's simply like, I think that there's a real correlation from the fact that we're asking for people to pay their money a second time when they haven't received the first one. And I think there's a lot of people that is a very, very valid concern. I think there's a lot of people, and thank you very much for pre-ordering, people that have, that feel confident that we will deliver like we delivered with the Ultimates. It might be a bit later than we thought, but we will still deliver. We will come through. But I think there's a lot of other people that are very nervous and reticent to spend money a second time, because it's not necessarily a small amount of money, before they actually have them in hand. So what we talked about this last week was simply that we felt like we needed to keep that pre-order open until we actually did what we said we were going to do and deliver wave one. So that literally gives us, it's probably going to extend it another month. So I feel like that's fair and justified, and that the concerns or critiques from people of not wanting to spend money till they get their figures is a valid one.
It is, and it's fantastic you're doing that. Tyler, go ahead if you had something.
Oh, no, I completely agree with that, and I think it's very commendable of you guys to do that for the fans and honor that concern, because it is a big concern for a lot of people, obviously. But I just think that it continues to set you guys up as a very reputable company to be dealing with, with people choosing to buy these He-Man toys from you guys, that you guys are willing to accommodate the fans so much, when it comes to these these points, and not just pushing the fact, well, this is your one opportunity, take it or leave it, trust us, and just, take our word for it. I think it's extremely commendable of you guys to do that.
Well, I appreciate you being nice to me about it, but there's plenty of other people who will be like, you need to get your crap together and ship on time. And they have a valid point as well. I think it's just same thing. It's just tricky. You lay out a production plan, you know how long you want to spend, how long it takes typically to do things, but we want to make sure that they're exactly right and that they come out right. And, it's just, I don't want to ship these figures at 90% where you're like, man, these are almost the way I want them. The reality is, if we ship them as we had them 3 weeks ago, 20% of the people that got them would say, I don't like the way they handled this, or I'm not sure about this. The vast majority of people that got them would probably be very happy with them. But that's not what we're trying to make. We're trying to make them fucking rad. I want people to come up at most of the... And quite honestly, what happens is I get to a convention most of the time and everybody comes up and says, I want to apologize for all the people on the forum. I want to apologize for all the people on the Facebook group. It's just like, and we understand that, but at the same time, a lot of times the people that are complaining don't have opinions that are invalid. They might have opinions that aren't relevant as opposed to invalid, meaning I don't like the way they handled this because my preference or my aesthetic leans to this direction. But there's a lot of very valid concerns. You know, there's definitely some that come into the point, especially when you come into some of the paint on some of this stuff, and they're blowing up this head that's literally 3/4 of an inch tall on a paint line that might be, you know, 1/16 of an inch. And they're going, oh, you know, this thing needs to be, you know, 1/64 of an inch. And it's like,
well, you wouldn't notice if, yeah, you wouldn't notice if you just had it on
yourself.
It's not actually
physically possible to do that, you know. Like, there's a limit to what you can actually physically execute. But I think for the most part is we try to look at everything everybody complains about and understand which parts are valid and which parts aren't, because you can always make the figure better. That's the reality is. Like, there's never going to be a point where the figure is perfect. You can always make it better. You can always make it better.
And it's
tied up in it.
No, and it's great. Like I said, it's great that, like you said, you're extending for wave two until, you know, people can see, you know, and finally get, you know, wave one. I mean, that's, like I said, you should be commended for that. It's just the amount of things you guys are doing. That's why I said no other company has done that. The amount of different things. I mean, just for example, out of nowhere, you show a 55-inch hanging, glowing Skeletor. I was like, how freaking cool is this? I mean, and then you gave the price, and you said it's free shipping. And some people are like, well, I think that's a lot. I was like, wait, do you realize how giant this is? And it's thick, and it glows in the dark. Now, the one thing I wanted to ask, I didn't know if it was mentioned, is it double-sided or just one side?
No, the first email erroneously said that it was double-sided. It is only single-sided. It's that was a perfect example of us earlier in the year going, you know what would be awesome? We really need to make Skeletor for, instead of a giant skeleton, we need to make a giant Skeletor for Halloween. And we're like, yeah, that's rad. Let's do it. And we just started making it. And we're like, yeah, it's going to be the coolest one ever. No, it's going to be bigger. Let's make it like this. It's got to do this. And let's do this. And we made it. And we didn't even remotely consider
the double
how we were going to ship it.
Oh, the shipping.
And we got it, and we're like, rad, this is awesome. And then it's literally like 3 inches too wide in one dimension and 1 inch too wide in another dimension to get any sort of, like, normal sort of bulk postage or anything else from the post office. It becomes literally like, if we had literally just made this thing 3 inches narrower, like, shipping would be no big deal. So we started going into all the shipping, because then we have to then buy these custom boxes to fit these things, to ship them, because I can't get anything off the shelf that fits it correctly. And the shipping is so exorbitant. We were just like, what are we going to do? Like, how do we sell this thing now? We're so screwed. So we essentially just came back to this thing of like, okay, we're just going to have to eat some shipping, and how do we sort of average out shipping for the entirety of the U.S. and eat a bunch of it, but that we're just eating it to a certain point. So it's like, we're going to make this just postage paid, doesn't matter where you live, and then we will deal with all this, because the shipping was going to be more than it cost for the item. Wow. And that's always one of those killers where it's like, oh, you know, it's like, hey, this thing's $20, but it's going to cost me $35 to ship it.
Yeah, when you put it in that, you know, like, perspective, I mean, yeah, I mean, the price, it makes perfect sense. Because like you said, I mean, the shipping's free, but, I mean, you have a 55-inch thing. It's a good thick stock. It glows in the dark. And, I mean, who doesn't remember having and probably still has that cardboard skeleton hang that they used to do around Halloween? So what's good about it is it works for Halloween, but it works year-round, which me and Tyler, we were sitting there and we were talking about it in our last episode, like, you know, what could they do for Christmas then? And I was like, and you know what? What's funny is I was like, well, Tyler, I said, there's a no-brainer. I doubt you guys could get it out for this year, but this could be a no-brainer. I was like, well, they have those muscle figures. They could paint the muscle figures, put a little loophole on the top, and have them as little ornaments. I mean, because back in the day, there was the erasers that they had. They had the Masters of the Universe erasers, but then also a company put out that same eraser and put a loophole just to let it be something that you could hang as a keychain. I mean, it was like a keychain, but I was like, oh, those muscles would be great because they could be little, they'd be ornaments And they could just be things you could have all the time. Of course, you know, with the paint application, that can make the price go up a little more. But hell, I mean, if somebody wanted three of them for $20, I think it could be well worth it. But that's something, I guess, to put into the, you know, the little thinker if you're ever thinking, hey, have little ornaments of the muscles.
Yeah, that's sort of in our one burning bridge at a time. I got to finish selling these Halloween things first. Now, but the good news is that, you know, while there's been a lot of people that have lamented the price, I would lament it right with them, because once we figured out what it was going to cost, we were just like, we're screwed. But the reality is, it's like, have you actually received them? Do you have them?
No.
Oh, all right. It's okay. You can say I didn't order it. That's fine.
No, the reason, well, hey, I mean, I just didn't order it because I didn't have the money. Believe me, if I had the money, I would order the thing, because I eat up Halloween stuff. I mean, I obsess on it because I still have masks from the past, and well, hell, I wear a mask right now, but this is all just because it's part of my gimmick of never showing my face. But no, yeah, believe me, I would have ordered it. The thing is, okay. I've been defended, believe me, in groups too. People have said, hey, I think it's a lot. I've came in to try to defend.
I agree with them. It is a lot.
Yeah, but I still try to give reasonings of why it makes sense, you know, price-wise and everything that goes into it. I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, originally it was supposed to be $20 plus shipping. We are a long way from that, unfortunately. And the U.S. Postal Service is not helping any of us. But, you know, it's the same thing, like, just trying to have some fun with it. But, like, the people that have got it, I think, have been just like, oh, wait, like, this thing's like the cardboard, and I don't have a good descriptor. It's like the cardboard is thick. It's like, it's thicker than a record, like a vinyl record. It's super thick. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's made to last forever. It's not a cheap little Halloween decoration.
Have you shown a glow in the dark picture of that yet? Cause I've never seen it glowing in the dark. I mean, maybe that'd be something cool.
Yeah. We had on all the stuff that we launched with, it was usually either a gift that went back between, light and in the dark, and we've posted a bunch of other ones. But yeah, it glows. Skull on Skeletor glows.
Okay, no, it's a cool piece. Like I said, I guess next year, I mean, if things work right and there was a different size box or whatever, you could have Scareglow. I heard that from
anybody. Well, now we know what we need to not do next year.
Yeah, shrink it up a little bit, make a Scareglow, and bam, you could have a perfect box that could work, and then maybe it wouldn't be as much.
Exactly. I need to... We need to ratchet it back a hair bit. Think about the back end.
Exactly. Well, Tyler, I don't know if you had a closing question or thing that you want to say with Brian before we wrap it up, because he's answered quite a bit, and I don't want to hold you too long.
Yeah. I was trying to think of one of the two questions here. I guess kind of combining them here. So as of right now, you said before that you guys were, you know, initially planned to release four waves a year, you know, yep. one quarterly. So is it safe to assume that beyond the have we got the four that you guys initially, you know, had planned with the Filmation and the two collector or classics lines, that this is the four for the year? Is that correct? Or?
Yeah, that was the plan. This was the four for next year. And then basically March would be the next one is the idea. And that every 3 months we would have four figures. So it's like, We haphazardly got the 12 out last year, not quite according to our plan. And the ideal is that by next year, here comes the three in March, then here's the three in June, here's the three in September, and here's three in November, December.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The other thing just in general that we'll announce next week is that we've hired a lovely gentleman named Matt as full-time customer service. So now there's going to be actually a person that on a regular basis can do nothing but answer all these questions.
Oh, boy.
Not right. these questions, but same like, oh, hey, I emailed Super 7 and they didn't get back to me. It's like, we're trying our best to get back to you. I knew that. It's like, so we finally hired somebody to do nothing but answer email, jump onto forums, jump onto the Facebook groups, and answer questions.
Have you got this guy a prescription for Valium and nerve pills? Because that poor guy is probably going to be a nervous wreck.
I just, as long as he doesn't promise anything, we'll be fine.
All right. Okay. Well, hey, Brian, we really appreciate you joining us and taking, you know, time
Thank
out of
you
your
so
kit.
Much. This was a real
no
treat.
Problem. You know, like I'm happy to answer anybody's questions whenever they come around, only because if they have to ask me, it's because I haven't been able to get them the answer some other way. So anytime you guys have questions, feel free to reach out. If I don't screw up the day and end up stuck elsewhere and miss a podcast, I will try to make myself as available to everybody as I can.
All right, and for the, like I said, the newer people that are, you know, just come across to the classic line. I'm hearing the echo. I'm sorry about that. But for the newer people that are coming across to this line, could you tell them where to go, what website, and they can go for the pre-orders and everything?
Yes, you can go to super7andstore.com, and it will give you all the information about how to buy all the He-Man toys you could ever want.
All right. And you guys
I need to jump in here, Joe, real quick. Since I have the opportunity here, I do have one question. It's a burning question. It's a question that it haunts me, and I feel that I must ask. Where are the plans for Disco Skeletor in the Super 7 line?
Well, we have a life-size fiberglass that's being made right now, and it will...
Sold.
Delivered directly to your house.
Okay, I'll give you my address.
Made to order.
Yeah, it's got an MP3 player in there, and you can play all the ABBA you want.
Fantastic. Done.
Doug, he thinks he's so funny.
There you go. Hey, all right.
Oh, Doug.
There you go.
All right. Well, again, yeah, Brian, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And
hope people are willing to come back and do it again, you know, sometime in the near future.
Of course, of course. Just let me know when you want me to come by.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian, for taking your time to do this.
All right. Thank you, and everybody else who's listening. Although it probably doesn't get said enough, thank you guys very much for actually buying the toys that we're making. Because if you don't buy them, I can't make them. And I'm very, very aware that we're in a very unique situation where we're actually getting to make the toys that all of you are sitting around talking about, saying, "Wouldn't it be cool if we made X or Y?" The fact that we're getting to do it is not lost on me, and I appreciate the fact that you guys are supporting us in the way that you are, and I hope that you will continue to support us and like what we're doing.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks again, Brian, and for everybody who was listening and watching, we appreciate you, and we'll catch you next week. And thanks again, Brian. See you guys later.
All right.
Later.
Do you want me to just hang up? Is that it?
Yeah. Bye.